morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important questions we've been hearing from international educators this past week. Before we get to those, I do want to say hello to those who are watching live here on Facebook. Always a great pleasure to have your input into the conversations here via the chat. For those that are listening on repeat on YouTube or Facebook page, great to have you as part of the conversation. Even though we're not directly communicating through that means, hopefully the information you're finding, the links that are on the Facebook page for this appropriate chat, you're able to make use of those for what you do. And for those listening on the podcast, a special shout out to you and for making us a part of your regular podcast listening. For those who are new to the Roundup, every Monday we put out a newsletter from SMIE Consulting called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news. We have about 6 or 7 social media stories a week and about 20 to 30 international ed stories from around the world, including some key topic areas in the United States, one of which is Solutions Central. We talk about those in the newsletter, some of those news stories, and then we take three of the themes we're seeing and major questions that are related to those stories and focus on those here on Wednesday during the midweek roundup. So today, our three questions. First up, what is the state of enrollments at U.S. colleges this fall? There's a couple of indicators. We've referred to one last week in the newsletter and on the roundup from the National Student Research Center, National Student Clearinghouse and Research Center. We'll get to that data, particularly as it relates to international enrollments this fall in a moment. But part of that is on the graduate side. Now, graduate enrollment is a part of international education that for the longest time, up until probably the mid-2000s, even to late 2000s, graduate enrollment was the majority of international students in the United States. But since the boom of China's undergraduate enrollments in U.S. colleges in the late 2000s into the teens, we've seen that shift happen from graduate to undergraduate. So what's happened with graduate enrollment is, as of last fall, between fall 18, fall 19, there was an increase of 2.5% between fall 2018 and fall 2019 of overall overall graduate enrollments. And what the numbers show, this is an Inside Higher Ed report that I'll be putting out shortly. They don't have the data for the fall 2020 yet, but it's certainly interesting to see that there was a rebound in international student graduate enrollments this past year as well, growing by 3.8%. So that's an encouraging sign up until the pandemic hit that graduate international enrollments were beginning to see more positivity. So we're going to look at what that means as of this fall, whether that's actually happened or not, and you can kind of guess where that's going. But this was a promising sign that international grad enrollments, though undergrad enrollments had certainly dropped internationally for the last 3 years, according to the Open Doors reports, and we'll see how 2019-20 academic year ended up in the Open Doors report next month, which we'll certainly cover here on the Roundup. But the data certainly shows that up until through the last academic year, grad enrollments, international grad enrollments, were beginning to rebound nicely. And that was certainly a positive sign. But the realities of COVID has devastated almost all sectors, with the exception of online enrollments, which have increased this past year or in the current year for the fall. You're seeing now real devastation across the board in terms of undergraduate enrollment and graduate enrollment for international students. And we'll talk about that here in just a moment in terms of what that's looking like. But where we stand with international students right now, for the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center data, we referenced it last week, and we'll go into a little more depth here. It has a number of different charts that you can sort through to get the current data. It's still not complete data, but certainly as colleges report, it's kind of a tracking mechanism to see how enrollments are shaping up, kind of a snapshot survey of what's going on. And what's important to see here with the undergraduates report from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center is that the numbers for non-resident aliens, from this report, that's where we define our graduate numbers. We had reported a couple weeks ago that undergrad enrollments looked to be down 11.2% for fall, and grad was about down 5%. Those numbers have changed in the last 2 weeks. We now see undergraduate enrollment dipping, international undergraduate enrollment dipping 13.6% this fall, and graduate international enrollment dipping 7.6%. So there's been increases of a couple percentage points in both of those figures over the last 2 weeks since we last shared this data. So that certainly is not unexpected. And still, to be honest with you, that is a heck of a lot better than where we could have been, given the how prohibitive closures, embassy closures and consulates have been and still are in a number of places. 66% of embassies and U.S. consulates and embassies around the world are still not open for business or are showing for international student applications beyond emergency appointments. Showing less than, 21 days wait to get an appointment for a visa. So a number of them are still closed in key areas, still not reopened yet in China. So the key market, and to be only down, only be down 13% or just under 14% for enrollments for international enrollments this fall. That's much less of a damaging blow than it could have been. Certainly with many in the sector, many of the associations in the sector predicting 25-35% drop, some as great as a 98% drop in our international student numbers, new international student numbers, I should say, taking us back to post-World War II lows of around 50,000. That clearly hasn't been the case, but what we don't know from these figures from the clearinghouse are how international students that maybe have enrolled but are studying remotely, that is not figured directly into these numbers. So we don't know what percentages. We've seen in some of the reports, as we shared in the newsletter this week, McAllister, for example, 2/3 of their international students enrolled are studying remotely from their home country. And that's certainly a sign of probably what some of the averages are, and maybe in some cases there are institutions, large state institutions, that did make provisions for their international students to study remotely, and that led to a significant drop off in their new international student numbers. We saw that at UC Boulder. We've seen that at University of Kansas this fall. A lot of state institutions didn't make the plans, put the plans in place to allow international students to maintain their studies, particularly, I think it mostly affected new students to be able to do that remotely. So unfortunately, that's not a good sign on that front. But overall, the numbers, I'll continue to say this until I'm proven wrong, that this is much better circumstances, even though it still sucks. And there are colleges and universities that are financially struggling, and there are going to be 10-20% of institutions that might go out of business in the next couple of years as a result of the pandemics, kind of pushing them over the edge financially. There are significant losses. There have been colleagues that I know personally have known for years that have been at their institutions for 10, 15, 25 years and have been let go in the last 3 or 4 months because of the pandemic. So there's a huge upheaval in our industry, but for those that are still employed gainfully in the field at your institutions, congratulations, you are the survivors. And I wish you the best of luck moving forward and hope we can be of help to you as you look to find partnerships to help build your international student recruitment planning to a point where it can survive obvious hiccups that we've had, major downturns that we're having in the future. So that the numbers aren't great, but they could be a lot worse is, I guess, the bottom line from that story. Now let's move into another favorite topic of mine, and that is state consortia. For those of you who don't know, I've been very active in building a state consortia in Indiana, Destination Indiana, when I was at St. Mary's and at Ball State University in the 2000s. I was chair of Destination Indiana for a couple years. We were really blazing a trail for virtual events to connect with international students back in the mid-2000s. While I was at Education USA, that was an important part of my job is promoting state consortia, the value of these consortia to groups that were looking to start or had just launched around the country. And it was a real boom time in the mid to late 2000s and early teens for state consortia. They've gone a little bit underappreciated over the last 2 or 3 years. Some are beginning to rebound. And this story here, this question here is, how are state consortia surviving or thriving on the virtual stage given the pandemic and the prohibition on travel and all of these wonderful things that have impacted what we do in international student enrollment? Two examples I want to share with you today. One is Study Texas, and kudos to Jessica Guyver, chair of Study Texas, and her team down there and the member colleges and universities. For banding together, they've already created a great promotional video for Study Texas, studying in Texas, and now they are launching a virtual fair on Saturday, November 14th, for 3 hours in Central Time Zone, and they have 20 plus colleges and universities represented that will have opportunities to chat and to learn about study and scholarships at their member institutions. So. Kudos to them, and I hope that goes well. I'm sure it will. And these are the kinds of events. Obviously, everybody's having to do virtual fairs. But when you look at what's out there, a lot of times the large vendors or tour providers that are now doing niche fairs for countries that they might have been traveling to physically, those certainly are working. We've seen Education USA doing virtual fairs in basically every region, scheduling those out over the last few months. And into the future, giving universities opportunities to connect with EDUSA students overseas. We've seen other virtual vendors, fair providers jump in as well with varying levels of success. CIS, Council of International Schools, has done a series of fairs. But when you talk about the niche fairs or niche groups that can have a real focused success, many of you know, one of my recent gigs has been doing fairs and tours for UWC Davis Foundation schools in the U.S. to connect with the UWC secondary school network in overseas. We've initially planned a month of tours to the different schools in 13 countries in over the course of a month, visiting 14 schools. But we had to shift that online. We had a couple of great virtual days, virtual visit days in September, got over 1,200 students registered, over almost 1,000 attended to the two-day event to connect with 48 Davis Foundation schools. So it's a niche program, but it worked. Worked very well with the school designated number of schools that were doing the promotion to their own students to participate in that event. But Study Texas is setting up their fair for middle of next month. To really provide on a Saturday, to provide students an opportunity to connect specifically with the member institutions in Texas. So best of luck to Jessica and the team out in down deep in the heart of Texas. And another example of that is even a little bit more niche is Study Illinois, another great state consortium, one of the probably original 10 in the United States. They've had great Department of Commerce support over the years. Deborah Rogers from Commerce is based in Chicago and serves as advisor to that group and has done that well for many years. They are putting together their own virtual graduate fair. So that is actually happening today, October 21st, later this afternoon from 3 to, looks like it starts at 3 p.m. Central, 4 Eastern, to 6 Central, 7 Eastern. And those are, they've got introductions to Study Illinois, chat rooms for the different member institutions, three rounds of presentations, and the chat rooms are actually open for 2.5 hours, so giving member institutions a chance to chat with prospective students. So really a good opportunity if you're looking to, if you have graduate students that are looking to find out opportunities in Illinois, a lot of fantastic institutions in that state. And part of the marketing for this event is talking up Study Illinois, particularly on LinkedIn. I had a lot of posts going out there that focusing on how Illinois is in the top five destination states for international students already, with fantastic locations and a large urban area, more rural and suburban areas as well. So great diversity of institutions that will be part of that program. So kudos to Study Texas and Study Illinois for making the effort to get yourselves together. And frankly, you're better together than you are individually. And in a time of pandemic where everybody's resources are stretched thin, this is the kind of opportunity that can really make your student enrollment plans strengthened by having these virtual elements, which are a must. There is no other option. You're not going to visit schools. You're not going to do fairs overseas. You're not going to even have representatives doing fairs overseas because they don't exist. The fairs aren't happening right now. And that's this is your tool. This is your way to reach prospective students. So really encourage you all to, if you don't already have a state consortium set up in your state, certainly I'm happy to speak with you and talk about some of my experiences working with different state groups around the country and what might be some of the strong elements you want to look to as you develop your own programming for member states and getting that together. And one of the things in the early stages here in Ohio is starting a group that there's one for public institutions, but there isn't one for the entire state. So we're looking at ways to make that happen here in the state of Ohio. So state consortium, if you don't have one already in your state, make it an effort. You do need a strong volunteer base of, I would say, 4 to 5 individual members that from different institutions that can really drive the efforts forward and to rally support at your other member state, member organizations and member colleges and universities. I know the regional NAFSAs are all going virtual this fall, and I know there's been time for these sessions, these kind of state consortium sessions. I've presented on many different regions on this kind of a topic. But if the conversations can begin somewhere, if you don't already have a consortia or if it's dormant and maybe needs to restart, maybe these regional NAFSAs can be a way to keep that hope alive of getting the consortia back off the ground in your state or launched for the first time. Final topic today is turning to our friends down under in Australia. We've shared in the past month or two how devastated Australia has been, higher ed institutions in Australia have been by the pandemic as well as other countries. But when we shared the numbers, one of the things in the comments that I received back from that report, there was a report from that was tracking monthly the number of students that came in on visas for study in Australia. Back in January, February, and even early part of March, those numbers were in the tens of thousands, up to 60, 70,000 at the peak in February, would be a normal year for Australia. But what happened once the travel restrictions went in place, that are still in place, frankly, in Australia, you saw numbers drop from the tens of thousands to dozens. Literally, their pipelines were cut off. 98% drops in, more than 98% drops in their international student numbers coming to the country for study. And that's something you don't recover from immediately. They are now, they've had a couple of trial pilot projects that were supposed to happen in August, September. Those were delayed or scrapped. They're looking at a couple new ones coming up for the Northern Territories and South Australia that hopefully will be going in the next month or so to gradually bring students back through quarantine programs that will be strictly enforced. It seems to be, and there's a couple of articles I'm posting, one from the Pi News and one from University World News, that share reasons why Australia probably is, of all the countries, best positioned to rebound quickly once the pandemic opens. And quickly might be 2 years, it might be 5 years. But certainly the impact of going from numbers where they were back 8 years ago, Australia had seen significant drops, fell to 230,000 international students. And over 5 years since then, their numbers rose 51% to 349,000. So for the higher ed sector, their history suggests they can rebound well. Why can they do that? Because there's a number of different elements that seem to be will see success. And my colleague Louise Nickel, who is a director of Asia Careers Group. She has some excellent. Her article in University World News is really well done and kind of touches on some of the reasons why Australia will rebound quicker. And this, let's talk about some of these. And when you think about it from a U.S. perspective, these are some of the things that we are doing in various levels, but not in a coordinated way as exists in Australia. And the sheer size of the U.S. higher ed landscape is drastically different from Australia, and that makes it obviously a lot harder, a lot more challenges, a lot more decentralized. Australia is not that way. When you have less than 40 higher universities that can collaborate very well, as Louise points out, they have a very effective lobbying mechanism. We have NAFSA in the United States. They have a number of different organizations that Universities Australia that do that kind of frontline lobbying efforts and the Group of Eight in Australia are very influential as well. They are investing in emerging markets, unlike the U.S. and the U.K. that focus on the big powers in India and China. Not that Australia doesn't. They certainly have those two countries as well as their top two sending. But they also are, they're investing in Southeast Asia, some of the emerging markets there. They have, a geographic advantage of being closer to Asia, where two-thirds to three-quarters of international students live that are going mobile. And they have a very proactive mentality, a willingness to work together. Those are things that I think really bode well for what's to come in Australia as they look to come out of the pandemic. Their handling of the pandemic has also been a lot better. They've had a second wave there recently as well, but certainly nothing compared to what we've had in the States. Their max number of new cases a day is in the low hundreds per day. At its worst was in the low hundreds. Now it's back to 10 to 20 a day. So they're doing well in terms of their response, and that will matter to future students who are looking at this, their parents especially, in terms of how their students are taken care of. And that's something in the U.S. we will have to grapple with as well as we come out and look to get back to more substantial ways. But when you think about to have over 98% of your international students not able to enroll since March in Australia and that impact, and to look at, again, back to our first story here, looking at the fall numbers for the U.S., to see that we're only down 14% max in undergrad, 7-8% in grad, that is, we've come out better. We've had a lot more mistakes along the way, and our campuses are not all handling the pandemic well. Some are, and that's great if they had well-structured plans and have executed those well. That's happening, but some are losing money. It's going down a drain quickly because of the the added costs of preparing for the, or of dealing with the pandemic, but also the cuts that have had to been made, the lack of revenue generated from new students not able to come. So there's been a huge, huge impact regardless of where you are, but it looks different in different countries, some more severe than others. And we're looking at ways that we can help institutions kind of make that transition to ride out the storm, so to speak, and but also to develop better planning so that these kinds of situations don't become major issues. So we're looking forward to future conversations with you on this, and until next time, I wish you the best and look forward to seeing you around at future virtual events like the Education USA Forum, their first virtual forum that's happening today, later today, live on Education USA. So looking forward to connecting with old colleagues then, and hope to see you soon. Cheers.